Welcome back to this month's episode of Don't Miss a Beat. I'm here at the ACC 2025 with my good friend and colleague, Dr. Muthu Vadugunathan. And, you know, there's so much to talk about at this meeting, and there's been a lot of great trials. But one of the things we wanted to catch up on, because we haven't talked about this yet, Muthu, is, you know, I don't know about you, but do you realize now we have potentially pillars for HFpEF? And, you know, we're in the age now of, you know, combination therapies. And it seems like just yesterday we were talking about all the trials we have been languishing with and still haven't had a definitively positive clinical trial, but now here we are with multiple therapies. So we're going to talk about implementation today and, you know, what we see as the potential practical path forward for how to use combination therapy for HFpEF and what that really means. So what do you think, Muthu? Are you up to it?
Absolutely. You know, four-pillar GDMT was quickly established as the standard of care for heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. And in fact, in a few short years, rapid sequence initiation of those four therapies as quickly and as safely as possible in patients, especially high-risk patients, also was adopted. And certain language is incorporated into clinical practice guidelines, even that patients should be optimized rapidly. We didn't have the luxury of multiple therapies in heart failure preserved ejection fraction, but the conversation has since changed, especially in the last year in 2024. And so how do we think about implementation strategies in HFpEF? I will broadly frame this as we can adopt a similar approach as heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. Let's get patients on these effective therapies as quickly as possible. We could take a more measured approach, start one therapy, see how a patient responds, start a follow-up therapy in clinical follow-up, or some in between. Steve, I have a sense that you have some strong thoughts, and I had the pleasure of reading a recent publication of yours, congratulations, about one of those implementation strategies. So perhaps you can take the pro stance. I often do not disagree with you, and that's the reason that I agreed to co-host this podcast with you. But I think we might be a little bit on different sides of the implementation fence with respect to HFpEF. So take us away. Rapid sequence implementation pro stance.
Pros, okay. So let's consider the status quo. The status quo is a serial, selective, one-move-at-a-time approach. That's what we've been doing with HFrEF, for example, for years. We've proven it time and time again in the real-world evidence. There's minimal changes in medication over time. Now, we also know that whenever you defer initiation of therapy, you have a substantial chance it never gets started at all, or the patient passes away or gets hospitalized in the meantime. These are lessons from HFrEF. And as you said, we didn't have much to think about with HFpEF for some time. We initially had SGLT2 inhibitors, and so there was a focus on early, you know, prioritization of that therapy right away, but we didn't have pillars. But now we're in an era where we have three definitively proven therapies in clinical trials. Not these trials that are maybe lukewarm positive with marginal p-values, but like definitively positive. And that, of course, now in heart failure with ejection fractions above 40% is SGLT inhibitors, non-steroidal MRA with the fine arts results, and incretin-based therapies. Now with the combination of STEP trials, both diabetes and without diabetes, and the SUMMIT trial, which had a primary clinical outcome endpoint. So we have three definitively proven trials, types of therapies, which have all been proven to improve hard clinical outcomes in one way or the other, and patient-reported quality of life. So just consider this as your framework. We now have three definitively proven therapies. I mean, the first thing I'll ask is that let's just consider science. We're not talking about costs and value. That's important, of course, but let's just talk about the science. For a condition with a prognosis comparable to cancer, which is essentially heart failure across the ejection fraction spectrum, why would we ever want to delay initiation of a proven therapy? That's my opening statement, Muthu. I got plenty more, but what do you think of what I said so far?
It's quite compelling. And these drug development programs were conducted largely in parallel or slightly offset. And so by and large, the background use was reasonable. For instance, SGLT2 inhibitor trials had reasonable background use of MRAs. Trials of the non-steroidal MRA finerenone had reasonable background use of SGLT2 inhibitors. And similarly, in SUMMIT and STEP-HFpEF, had reasonable background use of some of the complementary therapies. And thankfully, we haven't seen any meaningful statistical or clinical interactions that these therapies do provide complementary benefits. And so I'm in line with you there. Now, I will push back a bit that HFpEF to me, and I think many have discussed this, is not one disease. It has many faces. And ultimately, when we do see a patient in front of us with HFpEF, we can perhaps estimate their risk of progression, and it might be actually quite variable. We can actually precisely estimate this in clinical trials. If you look at a HFrEF clinical trial population, the distribution of risk in that population of clinical outcomes is actually fairly narrow. This is a pretty homogeneous population in terms of a predictable risk of disease progression. In HFpEF, it has one of the broadest risk distributions of any population. And so to say that we should take a uniform, pretty aggressive or intensive approach to all those patients, to me, seems a bit beyond the evidence. And to me, I think we can take a bit more measured approach. And I hear you that perhaps that selective approach that's buying into current clinical inertia is perhaps not best for patients. But maybe there's a middle ground, and maybe we can use sort of a risk-based strategy in which we identify patients clearly at high risk for disease progression. And in those patients, we adopt the Steve Green rapid sequence implementation approach. And in patients we expect to be slow progressors, may not be at imminent danger of some of the events that were prevented in these clinical trials, like a heart failure hospitalization, perhaps there we have more time. And patients, too, may be able to buy into this a bit better if with more sequenced approaches rather than upfronting these therapies.
So, you know, I'll say this. I think some of the data you're probably pointing to about the wide risk distribution, and there's some essentially applying very low risk HFpEF people. I think it might be a little discordant versus some of the real world data that we have from, you know, unselected non-clinical trial patient populations where we on average have orders of magnitude higher risk. So I think just keep that in mind. I would argue that it's very rare to have a true, what I would say, low-risk HFpEF person for whether it's mortality or, importantly, morbidity and the risk of worsening functional status, risk of worsening quality of life, risk of imminent downstream hospitalization. So I'll say this. So keep that in mind. The other thing I'll say, though, with all of these therapies, particularly SGLT2 and non-steroidal MRA, that the benefits accrue really rapidly after you start therapy. So, you know, again, within 30 days, statistically significant and clinically significant benefit. And I think it's a matter of perspective when you have the patient in front of you, because that's what one thing you mentioned, you know. So I totally understand it might be human nature to be a little reticent about starting multiple medicines at once, and we're naturally seem to be focused on these risks of side effects and whatnot. But we don't necessarily focus on the side effects of not starting a medicine. So again, we know that there are lots and lots of hospitalizations and deaths happening in this country every day from heart failure patients among people not on optimal medical therapy. And you just ask yourself, how many of those would have been prevented if we had a more of aggressive approach? And instead of saying, well, maybe we need to really spend our energy identifying the super low risk people who don't need therapy, I'd say it's safer to err on the side of overdoing it than underdoing it, because we've been underdoing it for a long time. And that underdoing is spreading to a lot of people who would have major absolute benefits if we did prompt initiation of therapy. And then the other thing, if we're going to have the science conversation about this, but just from the practical perspective, I see clinicians all the time. We moan about how we can't see patients in person as frequently as we want. It's hard to schedule things. What better than to make the most of that patient visit and start multiple therapies? Because whenever we have this, despite how well-intentioned we might be, when we say, oh, we'll do it next time, consider it in 6 months, more often than not, it doesn't happen and it's a missed opportunity. So It's a matter of perspective on this. But what do you think, Mutu?
No, you present some convincing arguments, and I think we can perhaps reach some middle ground that there are certain patients, in my view, where we should consider early implementation. And these people, now that the world of HFpEF has opened to new medical therapy options, we are trying to optimize therapies fairly rapidly now. And in my view, the highest risk patients, including those who are recently hospitalized or even in the hospital for HFpEF, are at highest risk for disease progression and recurrent clinical events. Those patients, I think, are optimal candidates for that rapid sequence implementation approach. I think we can continue to have these conversations around how to tackle the world of HFpEF, especially newly diagnosed HFpEF in the community. So a lot to look forward to. HFpEF is perhaps one of the most active drug development and therapeutic areas, and we may add new therapeutic options to many individuals. I do think that in many patients, we are going to adopt this pillar-based approach to simplify care, and these are remarkably safe therapies, and especially in a HFpEF patient, even with multimorbidity or even with older age or even with frailty considerations, the combination use does seem quite safe. We are going to see some prospective evidence of combination therapy in these populations. Near term, the CONFIDENCE trial is going to study the combination use of an SGLT2 inhibitor, empagliflozin, with a non-steroidal MRA, finerenone, compared with either alone. We'll expect those data later this year. That's in a CKD population. A complementary trial called CONFIRMATION is evaluating the implementation of combination use of an SGLT2 inhibitor and a non-steroidal MRA in a HFpEF population. Or in a heart failure population. And again, that will those results we expect in a few years. There are other MRAs or MR modulators being studied, such as valsartan, in patients with worsening heart failure in combination with an SGLT2 inhibitor. So a lot to look forward to. And perhaps the development of combination therapies, where pill burden, polypharmacy, those conversations might be actually simplified at the bedside or in the clinic, and patients may be very open to starting more than one therapy at once if it's a single pill.
I mean, exactly. I mean, we're talking about all different fields of cardiovascular medicine, about polypills, right, from an implementation perspective. So that's the same mentality here. We ideally would have it as one pill, and you know, there's the studies that you're mentioning with the valsartan, for example, combined with SGLT2 inhibitor. But the patients in front of you, take advantage of the opportunity. And we actually have a lot of good plausible evidence that suggests it's going to be safe and well-tolerated. Maybe even when you start the therapies together, you maximize that safety. You know, again, it makes a lot of good sense to start an SGLT2 inhibitor and an MRA at the same time. One prevents hyperkalemia, one might increase the risk of hyperkalemia. Makes it both hemodynamically neutral. All the therapies, particularly GLP-1 therapy, make patients feel better. And when patients feel better, they generally tolerate their medicines better. So again, and I also think, you know, lessons that we've unfortunately seen from HFrEF is when you have a therapy that makes patients feel better and you defer, you are essentially indirectly increasing the chance the next visit they are feeling worse. And then when patients feel worse, then we start blaming the GDNT they're already on. That's the unfortunate tendency. We say, oh, well, maybe it's the beta blockers responsible for the fatigue or dyspnea or whatnot. And we start withdrawing GDMT, and it's a downward spiral. So again, I would argue from a quality of life, safety, tolerability perspective, makes a lot of good sense to be upfront, early, aggressive with these combo therapies.
So you had mentioned the phrase pillar-based approach. And so if you were envisioning the current world of HFpEF based on the available evidence, we are considering major pillars of care, including an SGLT2 inhibitor in broad populations, an MRA, whether a steroidal or non-steroidal MRA, in broad populations, and then selective use based on additional phenotypic characteristics if a patient has obesity, yep. then an incretin-based therapy like a GLP-1 receptor agonist. If the patient has mildly reduced ejection fraction or an ejection fraction below normal, perhaps an ARNI can be considered, especially in those who are congested. And if a patient has congestion or volume excess, then a diuretic may be considered. But again, rapidly evolving space, but at least from my read of the data, that would be one such pillar-based approach.
Yep. I agree with that. I think, you know, we should, of course, not forget about sacubitril valsartan in patients with, you know, below normal ejection fraction. But again, if you're a purist, and I'm thinking about my priorities, my therapies that have definitively positive clinical trials in broad populations, you have the SGLT2 therapy, MRA, steroidal or non-steroidal. I preference non-steroidal to have as a definitively positive clinical trial if it's feasible. And then GLP-1, which again, in a phenotype of a BMI above 30, but the catch with that phenotype is it's so incredibly common, including in the United States. So it really is a huge breadth of our patients with HFpEF.
So thank you again, Steve, and thank you to our listeners. It's always fun to spar with you, Steve, and especially on a topic that's near and dear to both of our hearts of implementation strategies and heart failure. I hope everyone has a terrific, terrific rest of your ACC 2025. Many, many more exciting trials, registries, data to be released in the forthcoming days, and it's a true pleasure to welcome you back to Don't Miss a Beat. We will be joining you again very soon. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And we thank our hosts, HCP Live, for producing this podcast.